Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day. Thanks to Vanessa from Banksia, and welcome aboard the Starship Zero G, science fiction, fantasy, and historical radio for episode number 1586, entitled Tinfoiled Again.
Ooh.
Our podcast title is Widow's Pod. I'm Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh.
And we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land of the Wurundjeri on which we gather today and broadcast from and to. We would also like to pay our respects to the elders past, present and future. Well, speaking of the future, it's just the start of May.
Yes.
Things to look out for in May. First off the rank is ACME presents a spotlight on Hong Kong horror with some Wuxia Shengao movies, martial arty ones, gods and demons, hopping vampires. I love those.
Yeah.
And ghouly ghosts in Hong Kong cinema. And Spiro Econopoulos is curating this one. We've had him on the show before.
Yes.
And there are movies like Dumplings. I love that one. The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which is just such a great title. The classic, iconic, irrepressible Mr. Vampire with those hopping vampires, a Chinese Ghost Story, The Eye, and much more. Now, it has already started and it runs to Monday the 18th of May this year at the ACME at Federation Square, the Australian Centre for Moving Imagery.
Nice.
All right, so when we flop on over to streaming, Stranger Things Tales from 85, the animated series, has already dropped on Netflix. And I had a look at one of the episodes last night and it looked pretty interesting. Quite nicely animated too, I thought. The Lord of the Flies four-part series is dropping today on Netflix.
Yes.
Based on the William Golding novel, the tragic tale
of Boys Gone Wild.
Boys Gone Wild, yes. Isn't there a – there's a Girls Gone Wild one too where a plane crashes. Is that Yellow
– Yellow Jackets.
Yellow Jackets, yeah. And The Sheep Detective starts on May the 7th at the cinema. That's a great looking one. I think that's going to be very cool.
I think that looks like just the medicine we need for, like, you know, a world in turmoil. Just a nice little carved away piece of whimsical, silly
murder.
Animal animal detective murder mystery solving with Hugh Jackman.
With Hugh Jackman. I don't know. Does he survive for very long?
Who knows?
Yeah. Hugh knows. all right, Mortal Kombat 2 is on this week as well at the cinema. And we have Stan with a new horror series set in a psychiatric hospital. Well, you know, classic. The Devil in Silver, starting the 8th of May, adapted from Victor Laval's novel of the same name. And then there's As Daredevil Born Again Season 2 winds up.
Yes.
In great form.
Good landing for that.
Wow, you know, the build-up in these Daredevil shows is so awesome.
Yeah.
It's hard to land them, I reckon.
Yeah,
really tricky.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just enjoying the hell out of seeing Jessica Jones again in that.
I'm really glad that those characters and that series got a second life.
A slight spoiler. The CIA makes the mistake of sending a crew to around to Jessica's home to get her to back off.
Good luck. Good luck to them.
And instead of actually showing the fight like they do the corridor fights and stuff, it all happens off screen. You just hear it.
Nice comedy moment, I'm sure.
But with that winding up, The Punisher, One Last Kill, special presentation is coming to Disney Plus on May the 12th. I can't wait for that one. He's also in the new Spider-Man movie too.
Yes, I saw,
Mobile Suit Gundam Hathaway, which is one of their variants. The Story of the Nymph Circe is on May 14th at the cinema. And The Wonderfuls, South Korean series. Now, where is that? I want to say Stan, but I might be wrong there. It's a streaming series. Ordinary people get their powers, superpowers, and have to try and stave off the apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
It's actually it's Netflix. I'm just thinking about it. Who has the big South Korean shows? It's Netflix. We've got on binge the time-crossed romance Outlander has its series finale.
Wow.
Season 8 on the 16th of May. And The Boys, speaking of long-running series, 5 seasons, their finale on May the 20th.
And what a ride.
It has been. And they have not actually been able to stay ahead of current events with Homelander now deciding that his ascension to a god is on the cards.
Oh, dear.
They really can't. And they just actually pulled out all of their superheroes from other countries around the world because isolationist. Speaking of the Duffer Brothers, The Burrows, another 8-episode science fiction horror series. This is set in a retirement community.
Ooh.
And the cast includes Gina Davis.
Great.
Alfred Molina, Alfred Woodard, and Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman?
Yeah, so, you know, actually you should say like that Scooby-Doo. Bill Pullman, he doesn't do anything with that, does he? Bill Pullman, no. On May 21st. There's a whole bunch of stuff. Spider-Man Noir on the 25th on Prime. Nicolas Cage, Uncaged. What can we say? Mm. And the much, much anticipated Mandalorian and Grogu movie comes out at the cinema on May 31st. On Apple TV, Star City comes out on the 29th of May. Starts dropping. That's the Soviet version of the science fiction series For All Mankind.
Oh, wow. Okay. So look
at both sides there.
Yeah, nice. And like a Letters to Iwo Jima, Flags of Our Fathers kind of thing.
Oh, gee. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
Yeah, great series.
Yeah, really great of films.
And one for Megan here, BritBox.
Ah, yes.
If you've seen international foodie shows, little travel shows, and one's relocating homes and that sort of thing.
Yep.
This is Travels with Dame Agatha Christie and Sir David Suchet, tracing Agatha Christie's travels around the world.
Oh, nice.
And they've got Canada, Hawaii, Australia and so on, seeing how her travels shaped her books.
Oh.
And who better than the, so far, I think, definitive Hercule Poirot himself to present this travel log. All right, and that, speaking of travel and tourism, that brings us to
Widow's Bay. yes, let's look at Widow's Bay, which is a new series that is on Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's just dropped the first couple of episodes. And I think to get us in the mood, let's listen to a little bit from the score. So the score is by David Fleming. He is sort of a long time. He's collaborated with Hans Zimmer. He's co-composed on films like Superman and The Last of Us TV series.
Ah.
And he's also acted as composer on movies like Eternity and Anaconda. So he's got a wide variety of things under his belt there. So let's listen to this track, which is Welcome to Widow's Bay, before we jump on the ferry and take a little visit to the, some would say, accursed island.
Hi, this is Bear McCreary, and you're listening to Zero G.
Yes, welcome one and all to Widow's Bay, a picturesque seaside community with absolutely no secrets or sordid histories to report on.
That's all it's got.
Yeah, it's all it's got to offer, honestly. That track was Welcome to Widow's Bay, composed by David Fleming, and that is from the TV series now out on Apple TV Plus called Widow's Bay. It is a comedy horror drama series, and it was created by Katie Dippold. And the first two episodes are available to watch now, and it will drop weekly on Wednesdays. So there'll be overall 10 episodes, but we've checked out the first two episodes that are available to watch. So we're going to give you a little bit of a rundown and some early thoughts. Now, it's very much this kind of uncanny small town vibe. And it's got a lot of, it's already started to drop some kind of eerie, unpleasant little tidbits and visuals. But there's definitely the element of this kind of deadpan and dry humor mixed in as well. So I would say it's definitely not strictly a horror series. It's definitely going for slightly oddball as well.
Well, where does it sit in the horror comedy genre, subgenre? Is it a subgenre? Yeah, I suppose so. Well, comedy does feature prominently in horror-based shows like Supernatural and Buffy and so on. And as with most genres, there are dedicated horror comedy series. And lurching back in the day were the Addams Family, the Munsters, and the animated adventures of those wacky detectives, Scooby-Doo. Actually, there are pretty floral-painted van loads of Scooby gangs hunting the things that hunt the night, including the British Truth Seekers and New Zealand's Wellington Paranormal, with those two plucky police constables constantly fronting up to supernatural crime scenes, and not to mention Australia's own The Stranger Calls. And moving through to the on-trend undead horror, we have Santa Clarita Diet, Ash vs. Evil Dead, and iZombie. Vampires too, the American version of the movie What We Do in the Shadows. And if you split your sides watching Scream Queens or Shining Vale, there's always a chance you'll end up in the haunted hospital of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. And if you don't recover from the shock of your unholy medical bill, you can commiserate with Ghosts in all its very many international variants before circling back to the modern era, to the latest Addams Family generation, the giggling gothic Wednesday, which brings us to this latest terror tourism destination.
Yes, Widow's Bay, which is definitely taking hints here and there, I think, of a kind of Stephen King-esque weird small town setup. So Widow's Bay is set in New England. It's an island haunted, but it is, our setting is this kind of misty seaside small town. So already we get a bit of a sense of where we're positioned within this canon, which is very much a sense of cozy unease, I'd like to posit. As I mentioned, this is created by Katie Dippold, and we do start to crank up some of the weird horror elements in the second episode. But what I had noticed was, because we get to know these characters in the small town as well, you know, we've got a lot of sort of very colourful characters, let's say. There does have a kind of slight element of a little bit like an office procedural, like an office comedy procedural. And then that made a lot of sense to me when I saw that Katie Dippold was a writer on Parks and Recreation.
Yes.
I was like, okay, so this is where we're getting some of that from. And she's also been a comedy writer mostly up until this point. So a lot of her credits sit firmly within kind of the comedy canon. So that actually, once I sort of read up on that, I was like, okay, this makes sense, the kind of comedy that's seeping through the cracks in this one. But let me give you a little bit of a rundown on exactly our situation. So in the first episode of Widow's Bay, we meet Tom Loftus, who is played by Andrew Reese, and he is the mayor of the town of Widow's Bay.
So Matthew Reese?
Yes. What did I say?
Andrew.
Oh, who's Andrew? My apologies. Matthew Reese. And he is desperately trying to attract visitors to the island to help the local economy. So good old Mayor Loftus has managed to get a New York Times travel writer to come out to Widow's Bay to visit and do a bit of a write-up on the town, with the idea that this is going to kind of get some tourism going and kind of, you know, incite some interest in the town, much to like, you know, like a Martha's Vineyard or a Cape Cod, which, oh, he could only dream to be sitting in the echelon of such tourist destinations as those. But sadly, poor Loftus is kind of up against it, because around the same time of the writer's visit, there just so happens to be a creepy fog descending, rolling in towards the island, and also a spate of odd power outages, which there was a power outage at my house while I was watching this. It was truly very uncanny. I kind of had to giggle. And not to mention the disappearance of a local resident at the start of the episode.
At least one,
with circumstances unknown.
But this is actually par for the course for the town, apparently.
Absolutely. Unblinkingly do the residents be like, yep, okay, makes sense. Now I've got to batten down the hatches for whatever may come after all of these kind of weird omens, because Widow's Bay, it's a very kind of small insular community. We learn a little bit about its founding and its history in the first episode through a nice little kind of vignette set in the historical museum, like the historical center, and which leans to some very nice little visual gags and comedy moments as well. The island itself only accessed by a purely running on vibes ferry, like with leaves whenever they want, arrives whenever they want. So kind of little oddball way that the island runs. But in addition to being, you know, a somewhat sleepy town, as I mentioned, odd occurrences have happened over the history of this poor island. So Mayor Loftus's challenge is, how is he going to sell this small town where nothing happens except the occasional very weird thing?
Well, they have, you know, I mean, they're obviously playing on the John Carpenter, the fog,
yes,
sort of thing, because they have 360 days of fog a year in this town.
Which is so great for the atmosphere. Like, I have to say, this series looks beautiful. By the second episode, it does seem like the plans for this hopeful new influx of tourism is well underway, and this includes the reopening of an old spooky inn that has, again, question marks in the history books as to what went down there. Fact or fiction? We don't know.
It says something that the innkeeper doesn't stay in the inn overnight himself.
No.
He's on
he's
call.
He's giving away the hand there when he's like, okay, see ya, slams front door, escapes to his own home. And again, obviously that's a really fantastic setup for some really beautiful eerie moments, and again, great production and set design of this beautiful inn and kind of setting up a bit of what Widow's Bay is about and what we might expect to be coming forth in future episodes. We do meet a little bit of the local colour.
All character actors.
Yes. So a lot of people here that you will recognise from them having worked prolifically in sort of smaller supporting roles in a bunch of really sort of well-known TV and film. An example of that is Wick, who's played by Stephen Root.
Oh.
And good old Wick, he is just insistent that there is something very bad coming. He has seen the signs and he is saying, no, we should absolutely not be letting people visit this island. They should not be staying in this refurbished creepy inn, and it's for their own safety. Like, we absolutely, Mayor Loftus, please listen to me.
There's always someone, one person who wants to close the beaches.
He's just, poor old Wick is just really rabidly trying to get our Mayor Loftus character to see. But Loftus will not be drawn into the town superstitions. And it is indeed the town, because there is a lot of people who do believe in these different old laws and stories of maybe some island curses and so on and so forth that kind of hover over this community. But Loftus, no. He's determined to get this economy up and running. And so he'll do whatever it takes to prove that the island and the inn is safe.
He's like the Amity mayor, isn't he? Really? Yes. He's that.
He's out there just doing his best.
And he wasn't born on. See, the one of the many legends.
Many legends
is that if you're born on the island, you'll never leave it alive.
It won't let you leave.
Yeah.
So I think, even from the first two, we get little drip feeds of a bit of backstory of both Tom Loftus's main character, but also, yeah, the history of this island. We are talking Widow's Bay, which is now out on Apple. Let's listen to a little bit more from the soundtrack, I think. The score is written by David Fleming, and this one is called The Island.
This is George Romero, and I wouldn't be caught dead listening to Zero G on 3RRR FM.
That was The Island by David Fleming, and that is from the Apple TV show Widow's Bay, which is out now on Apple. First couple of episodes have dropped, and it will be coming out weekly on Wednesdays to a total of 10 episodes in the first season. Now, it's set in the haunted, again, like most likely, sort of seaside small town of Widow's Bay. It's an island community, and so obviously getting on and off the island is a little bit tricky with the ferry and so on, surrounded by the ocean. There's sort of, I guess, it's a fishing town. So there's
definitely
a lot of
fishing town.
Boat and sort of seafaring community. And there's obviously, it's got a big lighthouse as well, which serves as some great sort of atmospheric lighting.
Constant presence.
Yes. And I think, you know, the look of the whole series right away is fantastic. Like the small town vibe, the cinematography, kind of that muted but still very, it kind of just feels like a wet forest, like walking through the trails of, like, you know, a misty, creepy set of trees, which I thought, like, right away I was like, okay, I feel immersed.
And the architecture is well chosen too. The buildings are it's almost like there's a home show, renovation show that goes around. Turn your house into an Addams Family chalet.
Yeah, definitely leaning into a lot of good visual tropes around what you might expect in this kind of sort of small, creepy town. But again, yeah, it's like a one restaurant, one pub, kind of one coffee shop.
One abandoned hospital.
Don't stop. Don't you drive stop. Right past. And, yeah, I think some of the opportunities, because, you know, as we mentioned, it is a comedy horror series. The comedy is a very dry kind of humor, though. Like, it's not gags and it's not gross out humor like some of the other comedy horror shows that you mentioned in the opening, Rob. It's very much, this is a unsettling story, and that in episode two especially, it started to kick in really with the story of where it was going and some scares and some creepy stuff, which I really, like, the second episode really hooked me. But the comedy is sort of, it's less of a presence, I think. It's sort of just more there running, a little simmer underneath the happenings. Like, there'll be some good visual kind of jokes every now and then. And I think some of the character interactions between Loftus as mayor and his kind of crew of assistants and other people that work in Town Hall, that's kind of where you start to get a few of the laughs in.
I liked one visual gag, which is a tiny spoiler, in the inn where the mayor has been challenged to spend the night. He looks at the games shelf. He pulls a box off at the games shelf and it's got teeth written on it. Opens it up. There's just a pair of pliers inside.
There's quite a few good visual gags in that games cupboard, actually. But yeah. So, yeah, it's a very fine line that it's sort of treading between the comedy and the horror aspects. And I'd be interested to see how that carries on as the sort of series pushes forward, because it is a very slow burn as well. I think the first episode provides like a nice little foundational setup, but it's quite obviously building to a bigger mystery, bigger questions. There's a couple of breadcrumbs in the second episode of things that I'm curious to see more about. And it does start to give us a little bit more action, quote unquote, in episode two as well, which I'm hoping will become more and more. I did also see that T. West is going to be a director of some of the upcoming episodes, and he was director of the X trilogy.
Yeah.
So the films with Mia Goth, X, Pearl and Maxine. So that says to me maybe we've got a little bit more horror and blood coming. He's also very slick, stylish style as well. So I'll be curious to see what his episodes are looking like, the ones that he's going to direct. The first two episodes were directed by Hiro Murai, who's probably more well known as a music video director, but he's done quite a lot of TV as well. He was an executive producer on The Bear, and he's worked on TV shows like Atlanta, Barry, and he was an executive producer on Station 11, which is the TV adaptation of the Emily St. John Mandel novel
series.
Yeah, excellent series. So, and he's, Murai is going to be doing five episodes in of Widow's Bay as a director as well. So it'd be interesting to see how things continue to develop and unfold. How are you finding it, having sort of dipped the toe in with the first few episodes?
I'm not sure I want to dip my toe into the water.
I would say out of the water. I actually really don't trust the water at all.
There is a sea. There is a sea hag. Oh, actually, coulophobia warning. There is a clown. Of course, it's a killer clown.
It's very good, though. I was like, oh, this seems like a kind of jaunty series. There's not been that much scary stuff. And then I was, you know, proved wrong.
You know, I mean, look, it's got all the tropes in it. You know, the fog rolling
the
in.
The fog.
And there's sewers deep beneath the town.
Yeah, that was, there's a few little, not cliffhangers, but like, they definitely drip feed you, like I said, a few things for you to wonder about.
I do think that the Parks and Recreation comment you made earlier on is very apt because the mayor's office and the town hall, such as it is, forms part of the main scenery for this show where the characters will naturally come to meet up, you know, complete with the assistants and the town councillor just not all there, quite often literally not all there.
Like
they've gone home, you know.
To say that it's not a smoothly running machine is an understatement. Like Mayor Loftus, he's really pulling teeth, so to speak, to kind of keep this thing running, prove himself as mayor. I feel like he's also considered a little bit of an outsider in some way, and he's a skeptic.
He wasn't born there, you see.
Well, exactly. And this is the role, I think, that is so great to sort of view this environment and this series from, is you're following him, the skeptic, as he's trying to just do something quite reasonable, which is build up the town, create some economic opportunities. I mean, maybe he doesn't need to turn it into such a huge tourist destination, but he has vision for the town, and he's kind of getting foiled by the supernatural.
He has a bit of a, you know, he has got baggage with him. He's got a teenage son who's very bored on the island and wants to.
I mean, I get it.
Yeah, there's nothing to do.
There's almost literally nothing to do.
No, there's plenty. I mean, if he were a Ghostbuster or a Scooby, there's so much for a paranormal investigator to do on this town. Although all you really have to do is go to the historical museum and look it up there.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of hinting that, you know, it's the start of a wave of occurrences, perhaps.
Again, with the office, I'm thinking about the mayor's assistant.
Yes, now, yes. She's a great character.
She's very needy.
Kate O'Flynn.
And she's always trying to get her artistic side out into the community. Like, they print up a tourist book and she wrote a poem for it, and she finds it's been left out. You know, and it's like, oh, well, doesn't matter.
I think their working relationship and some of her sort of scenes with him are really great. I would love to see that fleshed out more as the series goes on, that sort of working relationship there.
Yeah.
I think she's so far seems to be a really interesting character. I really enjoyed it. The sort of, I will be continuing with it. I found, even though obviously it's sort of trying to sell this spooky small town thing, I thought it was also kind of oddly cozy. Like, I found the environment, you know, it's a lot of beautiful, warm, low lighting, you know, seagulls flying through a misty sky. And like I said, that kind of verdant aura around everything and some good start of some good small town procedural. So I was like, it's returning me to the days of, you know, like the Murder, She Wrote when she lived in the small community and was solving crime. I was like, I'm enjoying this.
What's Stephen King's town? You know, the main
Derry.
Derry,
Yeah.
You know, it's just got that.
I'd rather be in Widow's Bay than Derry, just saying.
Well, it's got sewers and killer clowns. Both, too.
I mean, yes, potato, potato, I suppose.
Everybody floats down there.
Also, it is a bit stuck in the past, which I think is a great element of it, too. Like, there's a lot of using landlines, reception's pretty poor. It seems to be sort of out of time, which is very intentional as well. So,
having so many people who've been in horror movies and shows and offbeat shows, indie movies and stuff, like, you know, Stephen Root, he's been all over the Coen Brothers films.
Oh, he's such a great character actor, really long career. He's worked on some really great projects.
And I had to look twice. There's one of the guys in the mayor's office, Dale. Mm. Jeff Hiller plays him from American Horror Story and Pluribus and Ghosts.
Ah, so, you know, there you go. Just some pop faves.
Up and say, oh, yeah.
And I did think I recognised Clark Kent's mother from Lois and Clark New Adventures of Superman playing a small role. I was like, oh, that's her. I recognise her just straight off the bat. So definitely a great setup. I personally think Apple is making some of the most interesting TV at the moment and really good quality, high concept stuff, very immersive, and they are not bowing to the pressure of making things double screenable. Mm. I think Widow's Bay is a good example of a show where you should watch it, which sounds stupid. I think there's a lot of shows and there's been a lot of controversy around Netflix, you know, allegedly commissioning shows that are designed for people to double screen. But I think Apple is making some really interesting stories that you have to be paying attention to get the most out of it. Like I said, there's visual gags here, there's visual clues. A lot of this is built around the atmosphere of the town and sort of the visual of it all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm I'm guilty of the occasional double screen when I'm watching content, but this show in particular, you would do yourself right by really absorbing it.
Yeah. Let it infiltrate your soul.
Let the fog in. Just accept the fate. So that is Widow's Bay. I will definitely be continuing with it as it goes on. What are your thoughts, Rob?
I can't say I'm hooked on it, but I'm curious, which is probably somebody should warn me off, I suppose. Some grizzled old gas station attendant.
Run! Yeah. Now's the time to run.
I keep wondering if they're going to walk around the corner and there'll be a fish man there with gills or something.
I am curious to see. I think it's going to amp up. Like I said, I can tell there's a slow burn and I reckon it's going to get quite hectic at some stage. It's right up my alley as well. Creepy, weird, small town. Creepy clown.
I grew up in one.
So I like this kind of setting. So I'll definitely be continuing with it. Widow's Bay, Apple TV is where you can find it. A new episode will be dropping on Wednesday. Hmm. Do we want to listen to another little track to go out of that? I thought for something different, I would play a track for one of the music videos that Hiro Murai has done the music video for. So like I said, very prolific music video director, has done multiple music videos over decades. So I just selected one from the list of his that he's done. And this is High Road by Cults. So let's take a listen to that mosey out of our review of Widow's Bay.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Morgan.
And I'm Reg Morgan.
No, we're actually Colin and Cameron Cairns.
Writers, directors of 100 Bloody Acres, and you're listening to Zero G.
They're not psycho killers. They're just community radio broadcasters. Is that all right?
That was High Road by Cults. And that concludes our review of Widow's Bay on Apple. Mm. And also concludes, speaking of, April Amnesty, because it is now, of course, May. So thank you very much to everyone who subscribed or donated during April Amnesty this year. Again, much appreciated. The station is kept running through the community, through people like you who subscribe and donate. And it just keeps us on the airwaves doing what we do, allows Rob and I to continue being unhinged and weird week after week and covering all kinds of the wacky, bloody, crazy topics we do.
To be fair, we'd be doing that anyway.
That's true. We
might be doing that in our own individual
into the void. But yes, you know, the station is run and kept going by subscribers, and it just keeps independent, algorithm free radio on the airwaves. So thank you very much again, and happy to be wrapping up another great April Amnesty at the station. And we should also mention thank you to the person who came through on the text line. Happy Star Wars Day. It is, of course, May the 4th, and may the 4th be with you as well.
This is the way.
Exactly. And Rob, very first Star Wars, A New Hope.
Yeah.
It
wasn't called The New Hope then.
It's just called Star Wars. Did you know, I mean, this was before my time, did you know what a phenomenon that was going to be?
Well, it was 1977. I saw it in the cinema then 12 or 14 times.
So you knew, I think. Something, I guess.
It was the first, the John Williams' album soundtrack was the first soundtrack album I bought.
Wow.
For myself.
Yeah, amazing.
Before that I hadn't seen as high-tech a science fiction film as that. Because I hadn't seen 2001,
right.
A Space Odyssey, until after,
yep.
Which immediately I felt was a superior film myself. But, you know, but Star Wars has legs. It's stayed around. It was the first film I scrapbooked, like cutting all the ads out and stuff.
Oh, that's so good.
Got the, you know, back in that day we used to get the program books at the cinema.
Yeah.
So I got those and all of the magazine articles. And
yeah.
There was no merch to start with.
Yeah, of course. That would have come later.
I missed the boat.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it a lot at the time, and just You know, it was a whole package for me. Soundtrack, seeing it in the cinema, talking about it with friends.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it really was a big fandom sort of thing for me.
I do really like when those movies come along that are a source of conversation and community and connection as well, like just getting to nerd out about them and share them and I don't know.
But never actually joined a Star Wars fan club.
Well,
never.
There's still time, Rob. There's still time. But yes, of course, may the 4th be with you and happy Star Wars Day.
Yeah.
Yes, now we're going to move on to some more weird.
Even weirder. Begonia.
Yes.
Our old friend Yorgos Lanthimos is back.
He's been busy.
Mm. Another surreally ghouled movie that has been through the cinemas and is now streaming on Prime and Apple TV rental. It's also coming to subscriber streamers in May. I'm not sure which one might be Stan. I don't know. Anyway, Begonia. It's a macabre genre black comedy, the English language remake of the 2003 South Korean film Save the Green Planet, which I have not seen. And that was directed and written by Jang Jun-hwan. Jang was attached to direct it, but had to the remake, that is, but had to step aside for health reasons.
It's a shame.
And, you know, actually, Lanthimos was the perfect choice.
Yeah.
To continue.
This is up his alley, right?
Yeah, it's like tailor-made for him. Will Tracy adapted the script, former editor of The Onion, Academy Award nominee for Best Adapted Screenplay for Begonia.
Yep.
Credits include Succession and The Menu. So.
Okay, so some really high-tension, nail-biting stuff.
Yeah. Yorgos, of course, we know for Dogtooth, The Lobster, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, the period piece, The Favourite.
Loved The Favourite.
The Frankensteinian Poor Things, and the anthology Kinds of Kindness.
Yeah, yeah.
Teddy Gatz is a fulfillment warehouse worker. He's on the conveyor belt by day for the major pharmaceutical company Oxolif, and the rest of his time is spent hanging out with his beehives.
Oh.
He's an apiarist.
Literally, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
His cousin Don, and of course, being a major conspiracy theorist who views the world through echo chamber podcasts. This poor guy can't even go for a ride on his bike through the benevolent countryside without cans on his ears, listening to the crazy. And he watches the world through tinfoil windows on his isolated cabin in the country. Ted's mother. Well, she participated in an Oxlif clinical drug trial that hospitalised her, put her comatose actually, which event has resulted in Teddy concluding that Oxlif's CEO, Michelle Fuller, is an alien from Andromeda who has enslaved humans and her race is bent on destroying humans and their honeybees.
I mean, it's a clear line from A to B there, logical.
Oh, yes. He has done his research. He has done everybody's research.
Gosh.
Teddy convinces his cousin to help him kidnap Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Outcome. Logic. Yeah. Intending to force her into confessing the Andromedans' plan to the world.
Yeah.
So we'll get into this in a second, but I want to give a track first, a little track called Grand Cycle. And this is where he's bicycling. But, you know, and it should be a bucolic sort of ramble. And yet the music will tell you.
This is Rob Sherman and you're listening to Zero G.
Oh, beehive. That's Jerkskin Fendrix's Bees. Oh, sorry, Grand Cycle from the Begonia soundtrack album. Fendrix has also worked on the Poor Things soundtrack and Kinds of Kindness as well.
Ah, he's a bit of a collaborator.
Yeah. yes, so to speak, and quite entirely appropriate for Begonia. All right, so we've told you what it's about. A couple of conspiracy buffs go off to kidnap a CEO so that they can prove that she's an alien to the world.
Should be easy.
Yeah, should be easy. But it's not because Emma Stone is playing Michelle Fuller, the CEO.
Formidable.
Yes. Zombieland is where I first saw her, of course. Gwen Stacy in the Spider-Man films. Birdman she was into, Abigail Hill in the absurdist period film The Favourite, and of course the Frankensteinian creation in Poor Things. Cruella, she's the title character in that too.
She's one of the best actors working today, honestly.
I would say that she's one of the most long-suffering ones alongside Eva Green. They could be sisters in pain. Oh, my God. And they don't treat her well in this.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, okay, I'll give you a warning there. It is kind of like a torture kidnapping type thing. Mm-hmm. I believe the South Korean one was even more over the top. This one they settle with some grim things, but, you know. And they have to shave her head too because, of course, you have to stop her from communicating telepathically with an orbiting starship, as you do. Wow. But she's great in this.
Yeah.
And she – well, okay, so she's been practicing martial arts and is the CEO. So she's no easy target for kidnappers.
Yeah.
She's very independent and strong-willed. She's also got a degree in psychiatry.
Oh. So could come in handy.
Well, yeah, you know, she's got to deal with these two strange people. And the thing is that it's a very small cast.
Yes.
Because obviously it's a lot of it takes place in a basement
quite
or a kitchen.
Quite contained, right?
Yeah, very contained. And of the other people in this, of course, and the original South Korean director and creator said he'd watch Misery. And he was a little bit unhappy with that because there was less of a focus upon the kidnapper.
Right.
I mean, he appreciated the victim's circumstances in that, but he wanted also to know about the kidnapper. So that what they've done is they've gone full bore on that.
Yeah, right.
For Teddy Gatz, played by Jesse Plemons.
Again, another one of the best actors working today.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we know him from Breaking Bad, of course, where he played a young Nazi. And the El Camino series, the movie that was a sequel to that. Second season of the anthology series Fargo, where he was great in that, where he played a butcher who was just a butcher. he was in Black Mirror, of course, and all sorts of other things. So he had that walk-on role in the Civil War. And, of course, he's going to play Plutarch Heavensby in the Hunger Games prequel, Sunrise on the Reaping. He's actually married to Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, I think they met on Fargo, the set of Fargo, because they play husband and wife in that.
Yeah, he's brilliant in this. He has just the right intensity.
Yeah.
He actually reminds me a little bit of a similar character in a movie, ironically called Bugs, by William Friedkin, which is, again, a psychodrama.
Yeah, right.
Quite literally. It's just he does everything awesomely in this. He's got that cold sort of intensity, but also can segue Tarantino-like to a quite likable person
who's
been hard done by.
Is there like comedy elements here, or is it kind of very straight drama?
It is a black comedy, but it is the blackest of night.
All right, because Lanthimos does lean a little bit to that kind of dark humor.
Yeah, it's
humor,
there. It is there, definitely.
Yeah.
You have to be.
But it's still pretty grim.
I said you have to have a piss poor sense of humor to laugh at this.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
But you do. You're sort of going, oh my God.
Because it's ridiculous. So over the top.
Yeah. Aidan Delbus plays Don, Teddy's autistic cousin, who's been sort of press-ganged into helping out.
Yep.
And there is the tragedy in this story.
Yeah.
Because it's exploitative on Teddy's part, what he does.
Yeah.
Aidan, he is brilliant in this as well. He doesn't say much, but he's a constant presence in that. And how do I put this? You've got Michelle Fuller at one side of the coin, and then you've got Teddy at the other side, and then poor old Donnie is in the middle.
Yeah.
So he serves as a sort of a conduit between them in a way. I thought it was a great, really constrained performance.
Yeah.
Not quite seen the like before, but yeah, so quite unique in this. We've also got Stavros Halkias playing a local sheriff. There's got to be
The local sheriff.
Local sheriff.
Yep.
He was in Call Girl of Cthulhu, which I have seen. for my sins, I have seen. And Alicia Silverstone plays Teddy's mother.
No.
Yes.
Alicia.
Yeah. Wow. Well, she's in a coma for most of the movies.
Okay.
So.
Well, easy gig for Alicia.
Yeah. Look, I find this an entirely credible theory for the behind colony collapse of bees. And honestly, this is a very intense psychological movie. Partly it reminds me of the imprisonment scene in The Man from Earth Holocene, which was, I was talking about the other week, but with a much bigger budget. It's like $45 million.
Yeah.
I think it's probably Yorgos' most expensive film.
Wow, and because it is so contained.
Mm. There's some lovely surreal imagery in this. They tend to intersperse chapters with images of a flat Earth, but rendered quite realistically, with the water falling off the edge and everything. It is obviously an occasionally violent movie with some high gore scenes because of what it is.
Yep.
I found it more rewarding than I thought it might be when I started it.
Okay.
There is a lot more I could unpack about this movie, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Do not read anything about it.
Okay.
I don't know if I've spoken too much about it. Don't look at Wikipedia. Just if you decide that you're going to see it, don't find out anything about it.
Yeah, best to go in fresh and let it surprise you.
Yeah, and watch it all.
Okay. Oh, intriguing, intriguing.
Yeah. I thought they really did well with this. I'm trying to be very bland here about it, but I did enjoy it. After I watched this, I went to my partner Gail and I babbled at her because I knew she wasn't going to watch it.
I mean, that's such a great thing, you know, if you finish a movie and then you just want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I would have been one of the little kids at running down the stairs to the front of the stage of the cinema, waving my arms. Actually, you wouldn't take a little kid to see this one.
Gosh, I hope not, please.
Yeah.
No bees were
harmed in the production of this movie.
Good. I am intrigued by it. Lanthimos has a really interesting filmography, and I'm always curious about what he will tackle next. And he doesn't shy away from the weird, gross and gory either.
No.
Both thematically and literally.
Mm. Look, I enjoyed this on many, many levels.
Mm-hmm.
The first of which is obviously the psychodrama of the bottle show that
we've got. Yeah, the claustrophobia
here.
And the going head to head.
I've just thought it's a perfect metaphor for a beehive.
Ooh. There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
See, there's layers here.
Layers. All right, so that is Begonia. And I saw it on Prime Rental, but it's also on Apple TV Rental.
Should be out soon.
Later in the month, out soon on streaming subscriber.
Nice.
All right, let's have another track here. Mm-hmm. I think actually we have two tracks that we could go to. What time is it now? It's getting close. I think we'll just have to go out with the last track, which is Where Have All the Flowers Gone by Marlene Dietrich in this case. From the essential Marlene Dietrich. It's one of the needle drops in the film. And
there are many, because I will say the music is...
Well, there are needles.
that's not for me. Because sometimes the soundtrack is kind of a...
I gave you a coulophobia warning for Widow's Bay. I can't remember what the phobia is for needles.
Yeah.
That was one in play in this.
Okay.
All right. So, again, the soundtrack... the regular soundtrack is by Jerskyn Fendrix, but this one is by Marlene Dietrich, of course, the classic Where Have All the Flowers Gone song. We're getting up close to that being it for Zero G. And Joe Brunetic is coming up next with Astral Glamour. And again, thank you for April Amnesty, all the subscribers and contributors and the staff who have been working behind the scenes.
These campaigns do take a lot of effort and time and, obviously, thank you so much, everyone, who made it happen here at Triple R.
And special thanks to our former music maestro, Simon Winkler, who has moved on to the ABC now. And he has been instrumental, quite literally, in providing us with many, many sound selections over the couple of decades for Zero G. And it's always great to have received his update on the latest and greatest music. And who else is going to be explaining all of the different categories of music to me? I don't know. Except perhaps for Joe Brunetic with Astral Glamour. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R's Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.